This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sunder, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Earlier on MSP, Matt did something completely different where he was asking me questions about my recent trip to CES. Thankfully, though, we kind of like rescued it on the second half of the show because it went back to normal format, which is asking you the hard questions.
I don't know. I think people might prefer it the other way around because it wasn't me spouting nonsense for once. So we might get messages saying, yeah, okay, Jeff, you just ask yourself questions. Matt can disappear from now on.
Now, I want to continue on my conversation around CES because, you know, as you mentioned in MSP, CES has always been, for me, like the tech spot for the weird and wacky things that people do with technology and make it into a business. And sometimes you wonder, why did you even make this product?
So yeah, I mean, not to interrupt you, which I'm obviously doing, but do you remember, I think it must be at least 10 years ago now, when they had like some outdoor robotics thing and they had like giant spider robots scuttling around in the car park and stuff.
Yeah, none of that nonsense this time around.
But yeah, exactly. But you know, that was the kind of weird stuff that really made headlines, because you had these giant monsters, you know, roaming around outside the grounds.
So if you look at some of the, you know, best of CES or CES reports from the bigger tech media, The Verge, Engadget, CNET, and all these guys, they all kind of like agree on the same thing, that this year's CES seems to be a lot more promising. But for me personally, I think this year's CES is the land of like partnerships. And it's been one key theme that I really noticed at CES. Now, I just want to talk about three items that really set itself apart. The first one is, of course, you know, we mentioned this briefly on MSP, is the Sony Vision S, car. Now, this is a fully electric car. And as I mentioned before, Sony could have just easily, because Sony are makers of so many types of devices, whether it's screens, whether it's sensors, camera sensors, the CMOS sensors, and all this kind of stuff, right? They already have all of this tech. So they realize that, you know what, there's a market that we can actually excel in, and that's the automotive market. So let's, you know, make a car with all the tech that we have for automobile makers already, right? So instead of just putting all these devices into a plastic shell and demoing it on, you know, like a rotating, platform, they actually collaborated with a car maker and built a car. Mm. And it's an actual car with, you know, specs. Like they were giving you the, you know, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour specs, you know, how much the battery weighs and the car weighs, and there's, you know, rail brake disc in inside of the car. It's a car it's a one-off production, but they're showing an intent that this is how serious we are if you're going to partner with us. Mercedes with their Vision AVTR, same thing as well. Partnership with, you know, the directors of Avatar.
But going back to the Sony concept, because this is something that Richard and I were talking about on Geeks last week when you were away. Can you actually see Sony becoming a car maker, or do you see this more as a showcase for all the technology that's useful to electric cars? Like, because, you know, Sony makes the CMOS sensors, it's in LiDAR development. Yeah. So do you think this is really a showcase for all the other automakers to say, hey, look, you make the structure of the vehicle, we can do everything else for you?
I think, I have a sneaky feeling that the reason why Sony actually went and made a car is just to test the market, to see how the market would react to a Sony car. And I think from looking at it, it wouldn't be surprised to me if in 3 years down the road, they actually make a production, or even just a limited production model, where they have, you know, 100 of these Sony cars for sale. Would they do it? They say they've got no plans, they're not going to do it. But I would love to see it. I think it's one of the most beautiful electric cars as well. Like, you know, if you look at a photo of it, it's like a, you know, Tesla and the Porsche electric vehicle had like a baby, and that's how it would look like. I love it, but I don't think Sony is like serious about making cars. But why not?
Yeah, no. Why not? I mean, do you think it also might be a little bit of one-upmanship against Apple? Because Apple have been talking about the car for so long, and Sony can just, well, we haven't even told anyone internally, and here's a Sony car.
That's definitely up their alley, right? Because Apple has been hiring engineers from, you know, all over the automotive sector, right? And here, Sony, everyone is expecting them to launch like something about the PS5 and, you know, some bigger TVs and 8K TVs and all that. They spent like only 5 minutes of talking about all of those. And then the next thing you know, boom, it's a car. And everyone go like, wait, what? Sony has a car? The logo on the car is not even explained properly. Like, you know, what's this logo? Because it's not a Sony logo. It's like some weird kind of fusion of Sony logo. So, yeah, a lot of questions left. But I think Apple is now looking at themselves and go like, right, how do we up this now?
Yeah.
But I love it. The other thing that blew my mind was Mercedes-Benz. So, you know, you would have seen photos of this. It looks absolutely insane, which is something that came out from, Avatar's movie with, you know, collaboration with James Cameron. Now, the fun thing about this is that, like, again, this is a concept vehicle that's actually usable. Like, they drove it on the strip a few hours after the announcement. Because where they launched the car was in a different hotel, and it's at least 5 to 10 kilometers away from the exhibition booth. So they actually, you know, had permit where they closed off the strip and drove the car on the street.
I'll be honest, it looks very... It kind of reminds me of the Audi concepts that were in the iRobot movie, but that you knew weren't real because they had those weird wheels that don't actually turn around, but the tires somehow do. But yes, I have to say, Sony's concept cars over the last few years have just been absolutely astonishing. Mm.
The one that was most overhyped by a lot of the media, because when they announced this, everyone was like, whoa, there goes the end of every front desk jobs and, you know, bots are becoming more human-like, is the neon artificial humans or the digital avatars. Now, they are part of, like, Samsung, but their booth was separated from Samsung, so they don't want to associate themselves as, like, a branch of Samsung. It's just a very mini branch. They're operating all on their own. I went to their booth, and basically everything in their booth is just motion capture, but they're selling you the dream that one day in the future you would have this real-life-looking artificial human on a screen that's life-size, that can speak to you and remember who you are and become like, you know, a personal companion, assistant, helper, whatever you want to name it. If you have a screen on it, you can bring up your digital assistant. But they're saying that the compute power to do one at the moment is really, really, really too much. So they did a small demo, and it was like cringy at worst. Like,
oh, really?
Because like cringy at best, simply because it's just really hard to compute facial expressions. So
yeah.
I think it's a cool idea. It's super overhyped, not too ready yet. Maybe in 5 years' time, possibly. But
also, I mean, we talk about invisible technology. Mm. So I'm just wondering whether you need that personification or whether the voice is actually enough. I mean, again, going back to the Star Trek analogies, you don't need the personification of the ship's computer because the ship's computer is everywhere. You just speak to it and it gives you the information you want.
Yeah.
And you know, we already have something that's very good at being a human assistant, which is the human assistant. So, you know, you do wonder what it is we're trying to replicate here and whether it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, go and check out Sony's Vision S. Go and check out Mercedes-Benz Vision AVTR. And of course, the neon artificial humans. Now, them calling it artificial humans is also like kind of like a marketing ploy here, because it's just basically bots, like a digital assistant. But, you know, when you call something artificial humans,
everyone
stands up.
If you want to see what the life of a real artificial human is like, you can just look at my Instagram account.
Anyways, when we come back, we will talk a little bit about how AI could now support astronauts emotionally on a trip to Mars. And also, we've got at least one happy story that's coming out from Australia, despite its wildfires. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9.
Because friends matter. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back, and it's Geek Squawks. Now, Matt, we always talk about the dream of going to Mars, but, you know, as we all know, it's going to take, what, a journey of a couple of years, 100 years, 10 years, 20 years? I don't know. It's like, you know,
no,
long,
I think,
a long
time. No, we can get to Mars in a few months, I think.
Okay, but still, yeah. You know, imagine spending a few months in this really tiny capsule with just another human being that you may or may not like. And, you know, it's just like me and you. You know, we could do a show once every week for an hour, but, you know, any more than that.
I'm just imagining the two of us in this studio for 3 months. I think it might get a little bit tense. And that's essentially what you're doing on a Mars trip, right?
Yeah. So, you know, what digital assistants could provide is actually recognize emotions and also respond to astronauts with empathy. And that could perhaps make that journey a lot more easier because, you know, living, working and sleeping in these confined spaces next to the same people for months or years at a time would be really stressful even for the toughest recruits. And we know that astronauts, they are trained for, you know, the most life-threatening moments, and they can work with extreme dangers and keep focus for a long period of time. But emotions is really hard to control. So AI is probably going to be really helpful here because thanks to things like, you know, Stanley Kubrick and the HAL 9000, the idea of AI in space has this, I guess, very unfortunate connotations. But NASA is working with many different kinds of digital assistants. For one, astronauts on the ISS recently was greeted with a new version of IBM's Medicine Ball-sized emotional robot, and it's called Simon, or the Crew Interactive Mobile Companion, to assist them in various tasks and experiments for up to 3 years. But currently, apparently, the results are a little bit mixed. So these robots, they are stunted by a lack of emotional intelligence, which is why JPL is now working with an Australian tech firm, Akin, to develop an AI that could one day provide this emotional support for astronauts on deep space. Now, in CES, there were a lot of new robots that was out on display that could also actually respond to your behavior emotionally. So if you come back from work and you seem really stressed, you know, due to your heart rate, or, you know, they scan your face and your facial expressions and it seems like, you know, you had like a bad day, it can also probably even like look into your calendars and understand like the day that you've had. It actually greets you with a little bit of empathy. And I think, you know what, despite it being creepy, if it's just a voice that you can speak to, then I think I'm all for like emotional assistance by artificial intelligence.
I can see the value up to a point, but you do wonder if you get to a point where because the AI we have now, as you said, it's a mixed bag. It's getting better, but you do wonder whether once we get to the point where we have that truly empathetic AI, is it actually, do we need to send the human astronauts anymore? Or can we just send the machines? Because by that point, presumably, the machines will be smart enough and cogent enough and sentient enough to actually do what it was we wanted them to do. Yeah. I mean, the problem we might then have is they might need their own AI empathetic support.
This reminds me of Marvin then.
Yeah, exactly. So that they don't go insane mid-space as well.
Yeah. What's the Marvin the Depressed Robot?
Yes, Marvin the Depressed Robot in Hitchhikers.
Yeah, sounds a bit like that. Anyways, we all know about the devastating forest fires in Australia. And there's so many stories that it's really hard for us to actually kind of like pick one to shed some of like the innovations that they're doing to sort of help with the fires. But I thought there is this one story that came out from Australia, and it's a bit of like a positive spin on, you know, despite the worst forest fires that they've ever seen in you know, decades, right? And this came from The Guardian because stardust that formed more than 5 billion years ago, long before the birth of the Earth and the Sun, has actually been discovered in a meteorite that crashed down in Australia making it the oldest known solid material on the planet. These tiny granules of stardust is shed by ancient stars as they expired, reveal clues about how stars formed in the Milky Way. And this meteorite accumulated the stardust during the billions of years it spent soaring through space before it actually crashed down on Earth near the small town of Marsican in Australia in 1969. And they've actually finally managed to sort of date this stardust, and it goes back to about 5.5 billion years ago, long before the sun was formed 4.6 billion years ago.
Yeah, it's when, you know, we talked in MSP about gadgets that are 100 years old, but it's when you look at meteorites, when you look at the evidence from the stars, that you realize how insignificant our time scale is compared to the rest of the universe. And just to be able to see something that is 5.5 billion years old, it is absolutely staggering. Mm.
They have also, I guess, answered one of the biggest life mysteries that anyone would ever have. Like, you know, what does it like smell like? You know, a meteorite that's this old. And apparently, according to the report, it's saying like it's like rotten peanut butter. So there you go.
There you go. The sum of all known history is rotten peanut butter. And like Douglas Adams, but what is the question?
Now, let's move on to Geek Squawks. Geek Tunes, actually. Not Geek Squawks, Geek Tunes. What do we have for today, Matt?
We actually have, this isn't a new track. This is just one I was listening to again over the weekend. I think it's worth listening to again. This is Amber Arcades with Come With Me.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.